In the studio this morning, I have Reinhard Kanuka-Fuchs, who originally comes from Germany, who came to Aotearoa 25 years ago, where he lectured integrative architecture at the University of Berlin. Upon coming to New Zealand, he founded the Tui Community, an eco-village in Golden Bay in South Island, where he and his wife, Jutta, raised their two sons, Julian and Tui, for 7 years. After this, they moved to Auckland in 1989, where he founded the Building Biology and Ecology Institute of New Zealand, which took the leading role for 10 years in introducing and developing eco-architecture here in New Zealand. Reinhard also ran 5 companies to meet the needs of the new eco-market he created, including environmental and building health inspections, bioharmonic home design, pollution detection instrumentation import, correspondence courses in building ecology, workshops, seminars and publications. Waitakere City Council then engaged him to write sustainable building guidelines. And funded by the New Zealand government and accessible on the internet, in the year 2000, Reinhard passed on all the responsibilities to the younger generation of those associated to the Building Biology and Ecology Institute of New Zealand, so he could retreat and travel with his wife all the shores, rivers, lakes and mountains of Aotearoa, and also write his book, A Home for the Soul. So, guten Morgen, welcome to the show.
Welcome, Tim. Yes. Thanks for having me here.
Yes, you've done a lot, Reinhard, there, particularly in the last 15 years here in New Zealand. But before we go and talk about that, can you please summarize the eco-principles again, and how it has affected the New Zealand design and the building profession, plus how your teaching and training and how the public awareness came into being?
Yeah, that's quite a story. Well, it all started when I became aware of the sick building syndrome that 15 years ago became very obvious to people working in places where they got sick, and also people living in spaces where they got sick. You remember the formaldehyde issue, you know, where people were polluted from the high content of formaldehyde coming out of particle board. So with that in mind, I started the Building Biology and Ecology Institute, which took care of exposing those problems, first researching them, of course, and then informing the public about the potential hazards. Now, when we look at pollution, we basically have 4 groups of pollutant, and that's what I've been teaching in those years. We have chemical pollution that now people are pretty much aware, not just the formaldehyde issue, but treatment of timber, paints, and so on, and a lot has changed in the past 10 years. We have electropollution, and again, then that has become that had entered the awareness of the public. Cellular phones, high voltage power lines, microwave ovens, even your power points and your electric gadgets at home—they're all potential health hazards if you are too close to them and expose your body to those frequencies. The body in itself has electric and magnetic fields by which we run, basically, our body. And if those fields in the body get disturbed, interfered, distorted by exterior fields, then that can create a health hazard. The third pollutants were particles and predominantly asbestos. But and we have still a lot of asbestos in this city, Auckland, and in New Zealand, in places we wouldn't expect it, in water pipes, in buildings, in insulation material, all over the places. And people, unfortunately, are still just removing old ceilings without precautions, although it is highly dangerous to do that. the fourth pollutants are mold and mildew, which have become pretty much into the awareness of the public, because we have the highest rate of asthma, which is related to that exposure as well. And microbes in what is now known as the sick building syndrome, and the leaky building syndrome foremost, is predominant a health concern. The buildings that leak will allow water to enter into the insulation, the structure, and then grow mold and mildew and other bacteria that can be a potential health hazard. And this is why now the government has taken action to resolve that issue of leaky building syndrome. So these are the four. You have any questions to ask?
Well, when you put them all together, there's a huge array of them.
Yes, there is. And when I started informing the public through articles, through lectures, through evening class at the university, people, you know, shrunk and shrunk more and more, and wondered whether it's safe to go home and have a sleep or go to work. But it is the reality, and of course our bodies are designed to cope with some amount of stress. And these pollutants, they cause stress, definitely. Known as chemical stress, electro stress, you know, microbial stress. And then on top comes, of course, the physical stress and, not to forget, the emotional stress. So the big catch is and was, if you worry too much about this, you cause so much emotional stress to your body that it's even worse than being exposed to those pollutants. So you have to find a balance between empowering people to become aware of those pollutants and also to find alternatives, how to protect yourself, how to use alternative materials. But anyway, I won't repeat what I've been doing for 10 years. It's just the introduction again into what has been done in the past 15 years and where people have raised their awareness, who, you know, were open-minded to inform themselves. I also brought sustainable building, but also a sustainable environment to the attention of council. And through the Vitekri EcoCity Eco Home Show that I had designed or created with council, designed it was by one of my students. Through that, we became examples for people to actually see and feel how a home can be created without those toxins. And together with that, Vitekri City Council, as you mentioned before, engaged me to write sustainable building guidelines, which then summarize the principles by which you can create healthy, environmental friendly alternatives. And this is the this was the aim of the Institute, to inform the public and the media and the profession, the builders and the architects, everyone involved, about those alternatives.
And at present there, are you finding there, particularly I'd say the building association, are they supportive when they realise, of course, there's more cost going to be involved to new production systems, particularly with the particle board, they'd have to phase that out. Of course, this is an added expense. They would be sort of reticent to want to have to change so much, but realise, of course, that particularly babies, I guess, they pick up all these things even more so than an adult.
Well, I was very much aware pretty soon that the financial side was a big issue. We have four aspects. We have to consider everything we do in life, including building a home and creating an environment. One aspect is the financial aspect you mentioned before, the economics, building economy. The second is the technical performance, and that would be mainly the most important factors that were considered until then by councils and by the public in general. But there are the two others, which is the ecological aspect. What does the material do to the environment? What happens to the environment when it is manufactured? And the fourth one, building biology. So that was building ecology. And building biology, what happens to the people working with it, the people who live with it? And these four aspects need to be put in the right order. And that's what I've been doing in these 10 years, creating an awareness first for building ecology, because if we don't do that, all the rest doesn't really make sense anymore. So if we keep our planet healthy and sustainable, then we have to look, of course, at building biology, that we keep our body healthy and sustainable. And, of course, the planet produces also toxins, natural toxins, that you don't want to expose your body to. So you need to have an awareness of what's good and what's not good for the body. And then third, of course, the technical performance. You don't want to build an earth house and the first rain puts it all in mud. So you have to consider also the technology of what you're using and if it serves the purpose. And the fourth one, of course, the finance. And you have to keep those four in balance, in a right proportion. And sometimes in some aspects of a building, one is more important than the other one. Materials that are close to your body, you want to put building biology first. Materials that have a huge impact onto the environment, you want to put building ecology first. And where the budget is limited and you can save without harming too much, then of course you have to consider building economy. So these were the aspects that I did consider in that time. Now I would like to come to the next question. So maybe
yes. What brings you now back into the public since you retired in the year 2000? And what's going on within New Zealand with healthy homes and the eco market? Because we can see now that people are getting very interested in new eco homes.
Mm-hmm. They do. I haven't as such retired, but I'm here. You know, it's like the professional responsibility as an architect takes up your whole life when you do it with compassion. So now I notice that in the last years with the leaky building syndrome, we had this huge expansion of building structures that I had a good thought about that they will cause problems, which is the leaky building syndrome. These are buildings that are not just built badly by builders. That may be one aspect, but the most important aspect is that these are buildings like two-story high buildings plastered with cement plaster and without any eaves. I mean, a child would even wonder how are they protected against weather and rain and sun. So to blame just the builders isn't fair, really. You have to then consider also the responsibility of architects and, of course, after all, it's the consumer. You know, I mean, buying those buildings to live in is just not appropriate, because these buildings have destroyed, not just the finances.
Well, this is what I've always been concerned about, is that a lot of relationships would have just broken down because they would have run out of money or had health problems, and then the families break up, mum and dad are upset, etc. Plus, on top of that, the buildings in many cases are just ugly.
Yeah, I do agree. Yeah, so with the new building code, just treating the timber is just like, medicine treating the symptoms. What you really want to do, and what the code also addresses, is to actually prescribe details that create better protection. But the essence is still that these buildings may be fine in a dry Italian environment or in Mexico, but they're really not suitable for New Zealand climate. And of course, if I want something that is not suitable for the environment, the climate, I'm going to have problems.
Yes, and you're going to have to pay for it.
That's true, yes. So we have better examples. For example, in Waitakere, in Swanson, there's the Earth Song Eco Neighborhood going up in Earth Structures. And it's not just an example of how to use natural materials in a sustainable way and also in a more visual, pleasant way, but also how to create a new sense of community. Something that evolved out of the challenges of people moving out of the city into the country, creating communities, which of course created their problems again. So people went back into the city, and now we have coming back these more village-type environments, neighborhoods, small neighborhoods that become sustainable, that support each other, and where you have an environment that is human-friendly and nature-friendly, where the cars are kept to a minimum of destructive interference. And incidentally, my son Tui is building together with his boss, Alan Drayton, there, and they're having a great time seeing how it actually changes the lifestyle of people. And this is what happens, you know. We actually become dependent on what we create outside. And this comes to the next step of my vision.
So you're in a parkland, essentially.
Yes, yes. Mm. Yes, and it's still intensive, you know, urban design. You know, you have people living close together, but not just gobbling up all the good space, but creating communal space that has communal quality, which is so important for the children, for the elderly, which are otherwise locked up in confined spaces, which isn't really very healthy, is it?
I definitely agree, yes.
Yeah. So that is one example, and there's many other examples of cities now creating sustainable spaces, small neighborhoods, where people definitely live in a healthier way, where the adults are closer together with the elderlies and with the children in a sustainable way, where we don't have this division of individual social groups. The children are put over there, the elderly there, and everyone is sort of confined in their space, but where you have a mix and where suddenly the elderly feel younger again by being able to pass on their wisdom to the little ones, and where the little ones with their intuition inspire again, and not just put away and in front of the TV, but where creation and creativity can actually inspire the whole community. And that's the idea of those projects.
So you've got running water and little ponds and footpaths there amongst different tree groups, etc.
Yeah. And yet it is this urban environment that parents can go and do their work and of course create the necessary income. But at the same time, you have a balance of your busy work life with your creative home life. And TV isn't just the only alternative.
That's right, but no doubt there is fiber optics into every house.
Yeah. So sustainable architecture is what we are looking at, something that nurtures the environment, something that nurtures the people. And that will spread over a whole, country, a region, a country, and then that country becomes an image. And I would love New Zealand to become that image in the world, to be and not just environmentally friendly, but a nurturing environment. We have taken on the role in Rio de Janeiro, to be a country that looks into the future, to protect the land for the children. And so we can now actually put it into practice and start right now with implementing those principles and creating those environments that are able to do that.
We're lucky because the population base and the land area in this country facilitates that, really, isn't it?
Very few countries can actually follow this through. And, wanting to do that, Of course, we have to realize that the mind is pretty much set of what people want through exposure to TV, to the media, to advertising, and so on. So I realized it is important to create healthy and environmental friendly homes and environments, but even more it is important to actually help people to live a healthy life in a healthy house, because a healthy house is no good if you still keep to using it in a very unhealthy way. If you just switch on the TV and rush in, rush out, and you know, don't sort out your rubbish and just live in this pull the plug awareness, this house can't do very much for you. It actually dies down to be used only in a conventional abusive way, and the creativity, that potential that is in there, is not being used. So it's important that people become aware of what that creative potential is.
And this is of course the light that comes in there, the ambience, and the atmosphere, and all those.
Yeah, you want to use those spaces that actually create communication. See, this is why it's so important to create a building that allows these different qualities of communication to occur. If you just have a house that is dominated by one medium like TV, this is not possible. But if you have a home, a place where you can communicate with yourself without interference, where you can second communicate with your partner without interference, let's say the kids or whoever, where you can communicate as a family without, again, interference of influences from, let's say, the road noise or whatever it is, where you can communicate with your neighborhood. And in the olden days, you had a bench outside of your house, and you communicated with your neighbors this way by just passing by. It just happened. You know, you didn't have to invite each other and come. You just passed by. And then fifth, where you can communicate in the rest of the world in a meaningful way, where it's a dialogue, where you can be active and not just passive receiver of something chewed up for, you know, making profit. And so it's important that those five ways of communication can be actively lived in a home, and of course in the workspace, and in a city, you know, in an urban environment as well. Yeah, so that's very important, to look at the consciousness and to see with what awareness people actually choose their living spaces. And so here we are back to what people really want. Mm. You know? And that comes right back into the heart of a person. And we recognize that surely there's our body and there's our mind, and they all want things. And it's a big list that everyone has, what they want. But really, when you come to a moment of silence within yourself, you will find that deep inside of your soul, you want something that actually everyone wants, which is the essence of what all these other things are. And which is love, truth, harmony, and unity. Because we are united, it doesn't make sense to live alone on an island. You want to communicate with people, and you want to do it in a meaningful way, because that really satisfies your soul. So that inspired me to create places where that can be stimulated, where that can happen, like for example the Tara Chapel in Coromandel, where we have an environment where the senses are resonating to harmony, and that resonance brings you back to your own essence. Places where people are in connection with nature, where we can learn from nature and not just always use and abuse nature, but when the principles, the harmonics of nature are laid out in front of us and we can just resonate to them. Because after all, we are beings that are like a radio station receiving and emitting. And it's our choice in which channel we tune in. if we tune in into the negativity of TV or newspaper, not saying that we shouldn't inform ourselves what's going on, but we don't need to put the focus on something that is actually destructive to us. Because if we involve ourselves in something that is destructive and there's nothing we can do about it, what's the point? So why not focus on things where we can actually do something about it? In our neighborhood, in our family, in our workplace, and of course in action groups on a national level and international level. So focusing on where we can do something will lead us to actually speaking our inner truth. And that inner truth is also expressed in what I now call healing architecture. It's not just an architecture that is sustainable and healthy. That is important. It's important to heal at a physical level, to clean up, to create an environment that is just and not unjust at a physical level. But we have to see behind that. And behind, of course, is the emotional level and a mental level and spiritual level. And at those levels, each person has those levels, and some are more aware and others less, but they affect each single person. So with healing architecture, we are looking at something that is actually creating an emotional environment where it's safe to express your emotions without being destructive, where it is safe to see where they come from, because it's not just the outside that is causing our anger and our frustration. It is something inside of us as well that is resonating to it. So we can definitely do something about the inside bit. Sometimes we can't do something about the outside bit. But if we start changing on something inside of us, we will resonate in a different way and then make choices that are environmental friendlier. And we will choose building materials that do not harm the planet. It's not something that just we sort of imprint into our mental awareness, like principles, but it's something that intuitively comes out of us. And it's so much easier, effortless, to do the right thing by intuition, by an inner wish, than telling yourself, don't do that, you know, and do that, you know, and just allowing yourself to flow into something that is healing. Healing for ourselves, because if we are in a state of struggle, of course we project this to the outside, to our children, to our partner, and all the struggle is just accelerated. And so it's important to find inside of us a space that is in harmony and peace. And it's difficult in a working place where we are challenged, and yet we can create a space in any home. Like I've visited many homes that are really not very supportive, but even there we can create little corners where we can express the beauty of nature, where we can express our love for our human beings. It can be just a little photograph. It can be something that reminds us and which allows us to resonate to that vision. It's like a light.
Yes, well, you've mentioned the word home. I mean, everybody knows that. Oh, I'm going home now. And it could be overseas or you could be in town, just going back to your house. The word home engenders some sort of sanctuary and security and warmth and where family are, or your mum and dad are, etc. So it's a lovely word, actually, really, isn't it?
Well, the home is more than just a house.
Yes.
See, we can buy a house, but we have to make it our home.
Mm.
And that's why I called my book, A Home for the Soul.
Mm.
Because what we want is to really allow our soul purpose to be expressed. We all want a purpose in life. We all want to express that. And in an environment that is supportive, it's so much more joy to do it. And this is another thing, joy. We want joy in our life. Everyone does that. And so we're looking at many areas of life, not just architecture, but medicine, looking at integrative medicine, which embraces both, you know, the conventional medicine and the alternative medicine, because there's good aspects in all ways of life, you know. There's something to learn from that. And so it's important to look at, when we look at healing architecture, to see at all these aspects that contribute to a harmonic environment. Now, brain research has shown that with our beliefs and our behavior patterns, we can actually block that openness. We can block our willingness to look at those options, and we are basically bound by our probabilities, which is, you know, what we have learned socially and what we have sort of took with us on our life path. But we can go beyond that. We have possibilities that we can actually plug into once we allow those probabilities not necessarily to dominate our life. And there's many ways in the New Age development how to practice those approaches where we go beyond our probabilities. And that applies to the whole nation, to a whole society, where we don't have to end up at this path if we make choices that we are aware of. And this is very important. And of course, we first have to look at where are we at? What are we actually doing? What are we doing with our homes? What are we doing with our families? Why is in the families all breaking up? And then when we face that honestly, then maybe make new choices and look at how these beliefs and behaviors are actually almost glued into our cellular memory, and how with our behavior we are sort of making them deeper and deeper as a pattern. And these patterns need to be looked at and opened up. And there's many ways to do that. Of course, in an environment where we are stimulated to look at the harmonics of nature, for example, like an environment where the golden mean is reflected, because it's in our body. See, our body is constructed by the golden mean. The elements of our body, like an arm, has a relationship of the forearm to the hand bone, and the bones, they're all in relation to a golden mean. Those principles of sacred geometry are the principles by which nature has been designed and by which the human being has been designed. So how on earth do we think it's good to create homes that are not designed by those principles?
I agree, definitely there, because we had Jonathan Quinton on recently, and of course he shows the hand and the golden mean, the references all through existence of this sacred cosmology.
And those principles can be applied in all areas of life, not just in nature and in our body, but they actually apply to our emotional body, to what we feel. These principles can apply to our thoughts, to our mental body, and to our whole awareness and relating to the cosmos. And there's so much we can learn to a point. See, when we come to this planet as children, our awareness is very much actually in resonance, in tune with those principles. But somehow we manage as adults to trim our little ones to fit into a world of perception that is actually very limited. And that limitation needs to be uplifted. And so far we can learn from those little children how they resonate. We can learn from nature. And we can learn, of course, also from elderly people who are sort of closing their cycle and reconnecting again to the to the child within, but also to the whole cosmos. Those principles, they are not just present in the universe. They're actually present in each cell of our body. Each cell is like a, you know, it's like a, it's an empty space really, where the spiraling of matter and vibration is guiding our body, and to trust this inner guidance is a very powerful thing. Yeah, so that's what the home for the soul is. Looking at an energy field around us and within us, and relating, learning how to communicate with it, and it's like Einstein once said, to solve a problem, we can't just do that from the awareness and consciousness we created the problem. We have to do it from a higher consciousness. We have to raise our awareness and consciousness in order to solve the problem. Mm. And we are pretty much still busy trying to solve problems at the same level.
I agree.
Just like internationally, you know, solving war isn't... You can't solve war with guns. We know that.
Mm.
And we can't... solve the war that goes on in our relationships with the same at the same level of tools we have created it, and we can't solve the war that we have inside of us, that conflict that drives us crazy, of feeling dispowered, of feeling victim. We can't solve this with that awareness. We have to raise our awareness, and the most powerful way to raise it is love. And love can be learned and expressed everywhere. It's all around us. We just have to see it. We just have to open our eyes. And there's a movie I'm going to see soon. What the Bleep Do We Know?
Yes, everybody's talking about that.
Yeah, well, that's very obviously showing to us how our brain is actually with patterns and with behavior and belief keeping us in the box that we have created ourselves. There's no one else to blame. And we have the tools and the power to break out of that box. It's mostly to do with courage and love.
Yes, we're the author of our own destiny, and if we can get the support of parents to just love us into being, that definitely helps. Mm-hmm. Can I just jump across for a second there? Of course, concrete blocks and square buildings and shanty towns and slums there, that's a huge hindrance on the human race. And I guess there, that as soon as we can bring the concepts that you are introducing, so that people can go into a home there where the geometry of a house is very different, and there are things on the wall there that people love. They've done their own artwork. I mean, the Maori had tukutuku carving on the wall. All these little things engender an atmosphere where people's vibrations affect them so much that they think, yes, this is where I'm at. This is where I'm. This is the place where I want to be.
Yeah. And you can feel this.
Yes.
You know, it's not something you just determine with your mind. It's something that intuitively you can sense. And let me give you an example of Nada Khalili. He is an architect known for ceramic architecture, and he won a prize with the United Nations where architects were asked to create something that will solve that problem of nations where most of the men have been killed in wars, where no resources have been left, and he creates a sort of dome-shaped like buildings by creating a sand foundation with bags of old fertilizer bags that are left over, filling them with sand, which is material in most of those countries available, and then the barbed wire of the wall behind using as reinforcing in between. And then having the children fill up the bags of sand, and then the old ones, which are still alive, plastering it with clay from the inside and outside. And you can create like for $400 a beautiful large home this way. And these buildings can be seen in this center in Los Angeles, but also now they have been built in South Africa and places like this, because that's really a much healthier alternative to the tin and concrete boxes that are sort of being built for those poor people.
Yes, we need to see real good examples. I know that hay bale homes and mud brick homes are finally arrived in New Zealand, or been here for some years now. These are also ways in which people can actually build their own houses.
Yeah, but again, we need to use a good balance and common sense, because you don't want to have your hay bales, lived with mice and with moisture getting in, so you need proper protection, you need big eaves, big verandas. Again, we are not in New Mexico or somewhere in a desert.
Right. Mm.
And we have to keep that in mind. So that applies to natural materials equally as it applies to modern building materials.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you give any other examples here in New Zealand of where your work is manifesting?
Well, I mean, there's lots. My students have now developed their own practices, and they are doing great work, building homes, workplaces, and they pop up everywhere. You just have to open your eyes. And I know councils have endorsed policies for developers, and there are actually developers who are using those principles. And some of the examples are still sort of far out in the countryside, which are not so easy accessible. People want to have their peace, obviously, like my clients mostly do want that. But more and more examples, like the Song Eco Neighborhood, are right in the middle of town. And you can come and visit them. You call them up, and they give you a little tour. And there's a number of places, and I'm sure we have websites where you can actually look at those places where they are and how you can get in contact with them. And that, I think, is a good way to raise the awareness. And, of course, also the media, as they actually, and they have done in the past, report about such places. But then again, you see it, and then comes the next news an hour later, and it's all sort of gobbled away again.
I agree.
So we have to keep those things alive in our awareness through education, through schools, through places where people are able to get in contact again and again. Because this is how we change patterns, by allowing to introduce positive examples into our life.
Yes, with and you got the support. Waitakere City Council came in behind you. And
That was then. Now there's actually a number of councils who have taken on, and so are industries, who have taken on healthy building principles for their programs. And of course, there's always, you go two steps forward and goes one step backward. Like with the leaky building syndrome, we had now introduction of chemicals into treatment of timber, which I had gotten out in the time where I was active. But I'm pretty sure that eventually we'll learn the lesson and use appropriate materials for appropriate places and appropriate design, so we don't have to use so much chemicals to pollute our environment and to pollute eventually ourselves.
Yes. Mm. So we've covered, of course, so many areas there as to how we can live in a healthy home, of course, and of course, the vision that you're promoting. How does our consciousness affect the way we live and work? Well,
we spoke a little bit about that. Let me just once more sum up how the elements of the environment actually affect our life directly. And we have, how many minutes have we got left?
15 minutes.
15, yes, that's lovely. So we have, our home is like standing in a environment where we have air, water, and the sun and energy, and the earth and biomatter coming and wandering through our home, and it's up to us what we do with it. See, the water that comes into our home, we can use in a way that we don't pollute the environment. Same with the other energies. And that's the task that each one of us looks at. What resources do I use? How do I use them? And how do I release these things back into the environment and do what I can to enhance when I do that? And by everyone doing that, we will have an effect in a large scale. And that's what I talked before about, the ecology, you know, durable products, recyclable products. I mean, recycling is something that has taken off quite well, not just into individual households, but actually in the business world. And I know that now new recycling schemes in the States, like recycling computers, for example, by reusing components, because we all know when a computer is thrown away, 90% of the hardware is still okay. It's just a chip or something that is not working anymore. So those companies are recycling them and creating a huge impact on the reduction of waste, but also a profitable product. And so these are the kind of schemes that will actually actively protect our planet from more and more pollution.
Yes, it's a house in Sydney where the water, all the wastewater comes down and is reticulated through the grounds and goes through all these reeds, etc. So by the time it gets basically to the other end of the section, that water's ready to be reused for drinking.
Yeah, well, it's possible. Of course, to do it on an urban scale, it needs you know, commitment. And also the technology to do it in a way that it's safe and hygienic and the rest of it. Because obviously a field like this needs to be kept protected from the children jumping in, you know. And,
yes.
And then so animals taking the germs from one place to the other. So it's all to do with a balance of natural principles with modern technology, combining them together and creating renewable resources, conservation of nature, looking at the whole life cycle of products, and not just like saying, oh, this is cheap, we'll buy it, but see, you know, how much money it'll cost society to actually dispose the material again. Like asbestos was very cheap when people bought it. But if they had to pay the price of how expensive it's going to be to take it away again and put it in a safe way back into the environment, it would have been a very uneconomic product. And this is what we need to look at when we buy something, not just the price we put on the table, but the price our children will have to pay to dispose eventually that material. And then you compare the prices of materials quite differently. Often example being told is, for example, solar energy, where the initial investment is quite high. But at the end of the day, we have to look at all the environmental costs that electricity is causing our country in the long run. And this is what we've got to do with other things as well. So we want also materials that are not combined, where one part is falling apart after a few years and the others may last 50 years. And we throw the whole thing away.
No, I agree.
See? So it's important to create technologies where we can separate these.
No obsolescence in the system whatsoever.
Like in a computer or anything else for that purpose. And by being able to do that, we will naturally recycle without having to make a big fuss about it. And of course, we need to have that awareness like we have nowadays when we're in the kitchen. We do have, you know, the different boxes. But, boy, I mean, 20, 25 years ago when I came to New Zealand, you would have been laughed at. And I think this is the positive changes that I can see happening.
I see change can happen a lot faster in New Zealand, but on the global, with 6.4 billion people, of course, this is a humongous task.
Yeah, but I think it's important not just to sort of give up when we see where it's all going wrong and saying, oh, this is just a little drip on this hot stone. It's not going to make any difference. Every single action does make a difference. And this is just, you know, no matter how small it is. And we do know that things change in life, not necessarily when 100% have changed. They change when even a number of 5% or 10% change. Then suddenly others follow. And this is how we have to set examples. Examples that are accessible not only to some sort of people living sort of a life somewhere out in the countryside, but right in the middle where the centers of our civilization is and are, and show how we can integrate those healthy principles into the normal stressful life that people have, and create those oases in the desert of stress.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and set up a template that can be yeah. replicated.
Yes. Yeah.
Once we do it, we can follow through with many others.
Yes, 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 that's right, yeah. And so, like at a friend of mine, he's running an integrative medicine clinic here in Auckland, North Shore. He has this vision to integrate more and more, rather than fighting the preventative medicine against the prescription medicine, conventional medicine, have them integrate with each other, inspire each other, allow conventional doctors to use those alternative methods of healing, and allow those alternative healers to actually practice some of the good practices of conventional medicine, and allow people choices. So you're not just bound on one way, and have the government to support that as well.
I agree. We have to be more whole in the way we yes. go about it.
Yes.
Very good. Well, we have a... Could you just tell us a little bit about your book?
Yeah. Well, with the book that is not published, by the way, yet, I have tried to... well, it's kind of a autobiography, but not a conventional one. I take a few stories out of my life to demonstrate how one person can make a difference. Like when I came here to New Zealand, really I was on my own with that healthy building. And I could see how the Gaia consciousness of our planet was so supportive that I was able, through TV, media, university, big industries, the public, to actually turn the wheel around and introduce healthy and environmental friendly building practices and materials. And with that awareness that one person can make a difference, that is a huge empowerment, because then you don't look anymore, what's going to be the effect of me just doing that? You do it. And once you do it, and you see how it actually creates change, you're like a bridge. You're a bridge between the conventional daily life and the new visions. And that bridge is something where you can walk over, where people who are so used to the conventional way can trust to make a little step on that bridge and get familiar with those principles. And those who have pioneered in the solitude of some places their new visions, they can come back and integrate it into society and make it applicable. Because not everyone can just move out in the countryside and just live in the bush. So we need integration of those approaches. And this is what this book is trying to demonstrate, how through your work and your life you can set examples that will inspire other people to join in. And that's what's so exciting about life, when you're able to do that. And I feel very grateful that I had so much support of New Zealand as a whole, but also of these beautiful people here have the compassion and the courage to do these things. Not just people out there in the countryside, but actually people in our neighbors. People who just live their stressful life and take this moment out and actually start doing something in a different way. And maybe I can close this interview with a song that my wife has written. I wanted to actually bring a CD where it's sung onto, but we didn't manage to do that, so you have to bear with me just singing it.
Lovely. Away we go.
Okay. Let me just find find it because I haven't got the words in the top of my head. So it goes like this. Sister and brother, I want to get through to you. I need you and you need me too. Let me take your hand for a while and lead you far behind my smile. There is my deepest inner life, I no more want to hide. Come on and let us open up, show all our hope and fears, show all our insecurities, the trembling and the tears. And then I can relax with you, can laugh and cry and dance with you, 'cause I know you and you know me, and that makes us so free. Sister and brother, I want to meet you in your eyes. Let's throw away the walls and lies. I can see myself in you, and I'm a mirror for you too. Let's dive together hand in hand, we need no words, we understand. Sister and brother, I want to be close to you, to feel you and to touch you too. Let our bodies swing along, together in their special song. Let's feel each other tenderness, the strength and warmth and gentleness. Sister and brother, I have so much to share with you. Let's be together real and true. You are my mother and my child. You are my lover, sweet and wild. You are my brother and my friend. Let's hold together hand in hand. Sister and brother, let our spirits merge as one. Forevermore God's will be done. Let us remember who we are, that you and I have come this far to realize and feel the bliss that love and truth is all there is. Come on and let us open up, show all our hopes and fears, show all our insecurities, the trembling and the tears. And then I can relax with you, can laugh and cry and dance with you, 'cause I know you and you know me, and that makes us so free.
Okay, oh well, first on radio, fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, that was the song my yes. wife composed and written at the Tui community. That was the spirit we started the community.
Good on you, Utah. Yeah. Okay, well look, is there a website we can track you, please?
Yes, I've given you the website.
Yes. Okay. www.soulresonance.com and www.ecoprojects.co.nz/about/BBE and the last one www.waitakere.govt.nz/ecocity/ecobuilds/sustainable.
Well, if you have difficulties to get into those websites, you can always contact me by my email address, bioharmonics, that's B-I-O, harmonics with C-S, and then at extra.co.nz, bioharmonics at extra.co.nz.
Thank you, Reinhard.
You're welcome.
Really pleased. I'm glad you came here. It's lovely.
It's great.
Okay, well, we'll see how New Zealand produces the vision.
Yes. No, it's great to share with someone like-minded like you. Thanks very much, and share it with all the people who listen.